This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Last week, British Prime Minister Theresa May formally triggered Article 50, which starts the process of the UK's departure from the European Union, known best as Brexit. Public opinion in Great Britain remains sharply divided on the process, just as it was when the issue was put to a vote last year.
Claire Boulderson is a longtime veteran of the BBC, now working as an independent journalist in London. She's joined us several times throughout the Brexit process, and she's with us now via Skype from London. Nice to speak with you, Claire.
Good to be back with you, Bonnie.
And this time we are talking after Article 50 has been triggered. And so what does that mean for the UK and for the EU?
What it means is that we have now started the process of leaving the European Union. That is the formal triggering of the talks on Britain's exit, Brexit as it's known, from the European Union. That doesn't mean that we're anywhere near negotiating what happens after we've left the European Union and future trading relationships and, in fact, the whole relationship with Europe. Because all we've done at this stage is trigger Article 50 by the Prime Minister, Theresa May, sending a formal letter to Donald Tusk, the President of the European Council, saying we want to leave the European Union. And then they start the long process, and it's supposed to be done in 2 years, but everyone thinks it might well take longer than that, of negotiating the terms of our departure, which includes financial terms as well, because the European Union says that we owe them an awful lot of money for this. We're going to have to pay to leave.
Right.
The
it's
EU.
Something like £60 billion.
It is, yeah, which is a very hefty bill. And of course, there are a lot of people in Britain who are saying, well, no way. Why should we pay? We've already been paying into the European Union disproportionately, which is one of the complaints about the European Union. It's not actually true, but people perceive as being paying in disproportionately over the years. So why on earth do we have to pay to leave? So that alone is going to take up a huge amount of negotiating time. And that's before you even get into negotiating your way out of treaties and how customs are going to be handled and all that kind of stuff. So all that's happened now is that there has been the official start of the talks to leave, and now they've got to start working out how we do it.
Well, the EU Parliament just this morning, it was reported that they voted overwhelmingly to take a tough stance on the UK and on Brexit, so they're not going to make it easy.
No one in the European Union is going to make it easy. Now, the Parliament itself isn't involved in the negotiations, but it does ratify the deal at the end. So when they get to the end of the 2 years, in theory, there should be a deal that says, right, this is how you leave. This is how much you owe us. Goodbye. And the European Parliament has to ratify that, although they won't take part in any of the negotiations. And they've made it very clear, as have most governments in the European Union, that this is not going to be easy for Britain. They don't want Britain to leave, not least because it sets a terrible precedent. And they're worried that others might think, well, if it's not hard, then we might leave too. So they're going to make it as hard as possible. And you have to remember that people in the European Parliament, with the exception of some of those from, well, the far right, basically, and from the very nationalist parties, they do believe in the European Union and they don't want people leaving. So, yeah, they're taking a tough stand, and that is not going to help the whole tone of the negotiations. And there's not going to be a very sympathetic hearing when Britain says, well, please help us to do this.
Well, the Brexit coordinator, the EU's Brexit coordinator, Guy Verhofstadt, who was the former prime minister of Belgium, has called it in print a catfight in the Conservative Party, that Brexit is just a bunch of people who aren't getting along, and it's causing a huge amount of stress and fuss for nothing. Is that a fair description of what's going on?
Those of us who believe that leaving the European Union is a very bad thing for Britain to do, for Britain as well as for Europe, I think we'd agree. Yes, that is. And that is something certainly that's being talked about in the UK. The whole reason that the referendum was held in June 2016 was to try and solve once and for all a dispute that had raged in the Conservative Party really for the last 30 years or so. I mean, it started not long after we joined the European Union. And funnily enough, it was a Conservative government. It was Edward Heath's Conservative government in the 70s that took us into the European Union. But since then, there's been a growing faction in the Conservative Party that has been anti-EU and that has objected to the power of the European Union and felt that Britain Britain's parliament, the UK parliament, should have its sovereignty back, that it should have much more power, feeling that the European Union had taken over that power. And it's always made, this faction in the Conservative Party has made life very difficult for Conservative leaders. And that's been the case right up until now. It was the reason why David Cameron, the former prime minister, called the referendum. He wanted to solve it once and for all, get rid of the very nationalist party, UKIP, stop them siphoning off Conservative votes. And he thought, well, this is the way we'll do it and we'll win it and that'll be the end of it. But of course, they didn't win it. They lost it, which means that that voice in the Conservative Party is now dominant, that voice that wants to leave the European Union and is saying we've got to do this on our terms and we've got to be aggressive about it and we've got to get what we want and we've got to get control back over this, that and the other. And the rest of us are just left thinking, well, hold on a minute. You're not actually talking about the future of the country and what our economy is going to do and what our new trading relationships are going to be like and what's going to happen, very important question, to European Union migrants who are an enormous part of our economy here. So I am inclined to agree somewhat with Mr. Verhofstadt. I think he's got a point.
Well, and one of the questions is the Scottish referendum for independence. This is, well, part two, because they had one before that was voted down, but very narrowly, to remain with the UK. But Scotland really wants to remain part of the EU.
That's going to be one of the biggest issues. And I think we could sort of see that coming. And now it has hit us. In the referendum, Scotland voted overwhelmingly to remain in the European Union. If you look at the breakdown of the votes across the various regions of the UK, Scotland was pro-Europe. And so there's a strong voice in Scotland saying, well, why should we be dragged out of the European Union by England, basically, because it was the English vote that wanted to leave. And the First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, who is a very canny politician, has said, right, well, there's nothing for us, no reason why we should stay with England in the United Kingdom. We'll have another referendum and we'll become an independent country and then we'll be an independent country that can join the European Union. Now, she's with the Scottish National Party. So obviously, you know, she's always had this desire to have an independent Scotland. Whether she could win a referendum is another matter, because there are a lot of people who wanted to be in the European Union, but also want to be in the UK. So whether they could be convinced that an independent Scotland is a good thing is not entirely clear. But it was quite a clever thing for Ms. Sturgeon to do, because what she said very clearly is, we're going to do this vote, we're going to have a referendum, whether you like it or not, we want to do a referendum. And that puts pressure on the government in London when it comes to negotiating with the European Union. They're going to have one eye on Scotland and what Scotland wants and be thinking quite carefully about how they do negotiations to make the Scots at least not unhappy so that they all try and vote to leave.
I know what the Scots say the benefit of becoming an independent country is. What is the reason for them to remain, at least as far as, you know, the government and England is concerned? I mean, what would happen if the UK broke up?
That is actually a more of a possibility than it has been at any time in the last 300 years. There is the possibility that the UK could break up, because Scotland could become independent because of this whole issue of wanting to stay in the European Union. At the same time, there's a complicated situation in Northern Ireland where the public wanted, again, to remain in the European Union, not by quite such a big margin as in Scotland, but they did vote to remain. And of course, they have a border with the Republic of Ireland, Southern Ireland, and that border is now an open border because it's all part of the European Union. For many years, it was a fortified border because of the conflict in Northern Ireland, but now it's not anymore. It's an open border. And there's a lot of questions about what will happen to that border once the UK, of which Northern Ireland is a part, once it leaves the European Union. And there's also quite a shift going on in Northern Ireland politics, in which nationalists and Republicans, people who want to be part of a united Ireland, so they want to join with Southern Ireland, they are in the ascendancy. And they've just done very well in local elections there to the Assembly. And they are saying, well, hold on, we should have a referendum as well. We should have a vote on whether we should join Southern Ireland. Now, they wouldn't have the support if they did it right now. But I was talking to someone just the other day, and we concluded that it could well happen within the next 20 years, that Northern Ireland, maybe 25 years, it could vote to be united with Southern Ireland, in which case what's left of the UK, if Scotland goes independent as well, is England and Wales.
And those are the people who voted overwhelmingly to leave the EU.
That's right, yes. England and Wales, of the four nations, as we call it, of the UK, England and Wales were the two that voted to leave the European Union. England being by far the biggest, that meant that the whole country then was dragged out of the EU. The Scots and the Northern Irish are not happy about that.
Well, on a personal note, this is affecting people in lots of different ways. The specter of this divorce happening between the UK and EU, and you have a story.
Yeah, that's right. I've done something that I never thought I would do. I've never given it any thought whatsoever, which is to apply for, and in fact to be given, German citizenship. Now, I can do that because my mother was a refugee from Nazi Germany. And under a very specific law that they have in Germany, if you fled the country and were stripped of your citizenship under some Nazi laws of 1941, having not yet been naturalized in your country of arrival, then you were considered to have illegally had your citizenship taken away from you, and it can be restored. And more to the point, it's restored for all your descendants, your direct descendants as well. My mother's no longer with us, but I, as her descendant, am entitled to have my German citizenship restored. So I did the forms and I dug out a lot of archival material and some amazing documents and birth certificates of grandparents and all sorts of things for myself and several members of my family, including the next generation as well. And we applied, and we now have our certificates of naturalization, and we are dual nationals for England and Germany. And it's a slightly odd situation to be in, really, but we've done it. We would never have done it, I think, if it hadn't been for Brexit. We've done it because we feel European, not just because of our roots, but because of the whole relationship between the UK and Europe over the last 50 years or so. We feel that we are part of Europe, and we want to remain part of Europe, and we feel quite strongly about that. And we want the options that that gives you, being able to work freely in other European countries and all that kind of thing, which is very important for the next generation in our family. And for me in particular, I often say to people that I lived in Indonesia for a while, and I knew when I lived in Indonesia as a BBC correspondent that I was a foreigner. When I then came to the United States as a correspondent, I knew that I was a European. And I think there is such a thing as being a European. I think one's values are slightly different, one's culture is slightly different. And I knew at that point that I wanted to stay European. And so that's why I have done this. And an awful lot of people have done it. People who'd never have thought of doing it before. The German embassy here in London has been inundated with requests for people to have their citizenship restored to them. And they're handing out certificates on a regular basis. So there are a lot of us who've done this.
Is it likely that once Brexit is complete that you will move?
No, I've no intention of doing that at all. I don't want to live in Germany, and it's very important to me. If I'd had to give up my British citizenship, I wouldn't have done it. I don't see any advantages in doing that. For me, it's more of a statement, and a statement of my culture and my roots and of where I want to be in terms of being a European. I don't believe necessarily in a federal Europe, which is one of the things. There's been a lot of tension between Britain and Germany and France over. There's always this feeling that Germany is trying to push us into just being a federal union. I don't necessarily believe in that. I think that individual countries should still have quite a lot of sovereignty over their own affairs. But I think the European Union has been of enormous benefit to all of us, and definitely to the UK. And of course, one can go on feeling European without being in the European Union. But I don't like what Brexit says about us. It says we reject that. We don't want to be part of that. We're turning our backs on it. And so I've done the opposite gesture, which says, no, not me. I'm not doing that. I'm not turning my back on it. I want to be part of it.
And you're not alone.
No, absolutely not. I don't know what the current numbers are, but it's in the thousands, definitely, that people are applying.
Well, as they say, may we live in interesting times. Claire Boulderson, I am so thrilled that you took some time out today to talk with us. Thank you so much.
A great pleasure, Bonnie. Thank you.
Claire Boulderson is a longtime veteran of the BBC, now working as an independent journalist in London. You'll find more coverage of Brexit at WUWM.com. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in, melt